Hey, welcome back to the show. Today's guest is James Bracey. James is a professional cricketer at Gloucestershire Cricket Club, as well as having captained them as well and having represented England. Expect to hear about earning your right in performance pathways, dealing with performances not going to plan, how to lead, body language as a leader, if England's Bazball affects county cricketers, staying true to your game, and much more. But before we get started, please do me the great favour and hit the subscribe button on whatever platform you're following along on or listening on. It really does make a huge, huge difference, and it's the easiest and cheapest way to support what this show is all about. It allows us to grow the show and get on more guests, more episodes. So I thank you so much for doing that. In other news, don't forget to join The Game Plan, a free email that I send out every Friday morning with inspiration, motivation, ideas on mindset and mental skills to help your game and perspective. Simply click the link in the description below to join or head over to lewishatchett.com/the-game-plan. You can find the link in the description of this episode. Thank you so much, and I'll see you Friday morning. But on to today's episode with James Bracey. Enjoy. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us. Good to be here.
Yeah, so we've been working together for quite a while now, but I thought it'd be great to get you onto the show. There's a few things I want to talk about, especially around, well, there's actually very different things I want to talk about, but really starting from sort of junior cricket and going into sort of playing for England and things like that. But yeah, how are you at? Where are you at with the season right now? How are you currently feeling?
Yeah, good. I think it's on that wind down towards the back end now. So it's almost like the end's in sight a little bit. Got knocked out of the One Day Cup this week. So that was obviously disappointing, but got three more county championship games to go. So still plenty to play for.
Yeah. For people that don't know county cricket, like, it is a real grind. It is a real long old slog. People used to call it, it's probably still called the treadmill.
Yeah.
The county treadmill. But I think if there's anything in this period towards the end of a season, what is it that you try to focus on to allow that side of it, that grinding out a season, and it's very easy to let it just peter off. What's the things that you would focus on towards the back end of a season to keep motivation up, energy up?
Yeah, there's always something to play for. I think the good thing with team sports is you're always playing for your place as well. Like, you're always looking to put in good performances to try and maybe, you know, lock in your position for the next year, you know, try and prove to yourself that you've got the performances in you. I think as captain at the moment, obviously winning games is a huge thing for us. We've struggled a little bit this year and we almost want to try and kick on a little bit and finish strong. And, you know, it's first class cricket. It's a pleasure to be able to play it. It's three more fixtures that we can try and win and try and disrupt, obviously, the teams above us and finish above them.
Yeah, you said you had the captaincy role. It's something that's a little bit new for you.
Yeah.
How's it been being captain? Have you had to change anything that you do, your approach, since being given the captaincy?
No, I don't think so. I think it's almost gone the other way. I've almost put my own focus back on the back burner a little bit, the focus on my own game, which actually hasn't been a bad thing. It's been quite good for me. I think it's a little bit of that extra pressure that I usually put on myself to score runs and keep well. I've sort of invested a bit of that in the team and how we're going to win games and focusing on how I can help other people, which has actually had a nice, almost calming effect on the rest of my game, which I've quite enjoyed. You know, I'm always very invested in trying to win and getting the most out for the whole team. So I think it's actually suited me quite well.
That's interesting that you say it's sort of taken a little bit of pressure off. Most people would say like it's added pressure. But the other thing as well, I guess with you being a keeper, you're always in the game. So I think people that have been captains in a game like cricket, it's that added part of the job where you're constantly looking around. But I think your skill set sits with always watching sort of in the game at all times. So it definitely helps.
Yeah. And I think we've had, you know, quite a few of our guys have actually captained before as well. I think there's sort of three or four other guys on the side of captain. So I've definitely leaned on them and they've helped me out through that as well, which has really worked quite nicely. You know, sometimes I look up and go, oh, I was sort of too busy focusing on other people and need to, you know, bring a bit more attention back onto my game and my processes. But I think if I can strike a balance where that becomes easier to manage alongside it, I think it could work really well.
Does that make it easier to captain when you have got other guys that are sort of self-leading, or does it become more complicated when there's more chefs in the kitchen? Essentially, there's that balance, isn't there? Like, you want to have people that are completely accountable to their games, mm-hmm. like completely switched on. I think especially from on the field as a bowler and things like that, you don't want to have to be doing certain parts of their game, whether it's setting mm-hmm. fields or whatever it might be. But is it helpful having people that can lead themselves? Can it be a bit of a hindrance sometimes? Where do you sit with that?
I think when, especially obviously I'm not a bowler, but when bowlers then can take responsibility for what they're trying to do, it's the best thing in the world for me. If a bowler comes up to me and goes, right, I'm bowling at this time, I want to do this, this is my field, there, I'm like, perfect. Because not only, one, obviously then it means I'm doing less, but two, it means they've got a really clear idea of what they're trying to do and they know how they're going to execute it, and you can just sort of fiddle with it from there. I think in terms of the number of people contributing in white ball cricket, it can be tricky because there's obviously so many ways you can look achieving the same outcome. Whereas red ball cricket, where it's a bit more fixed and long-winded and you've got to be patient and just sort of truck away at the same sort of intensity, it becomes a little bit easier to manage. It's a little bit more slow paced, a little bit more, you know, of a fixed skill. You're running in and trying to hit a similar area the majority of the time. It can get quite frantic in white ball, but I think when you speak to those people beforehand and they're aware of how they can help you, it then becomes a little bit like, you don't want five blokes standing around arguing about what to do and the bowler's then quite unclear. I think I've become better at letting people know, you know, if you want some help with bowling specific stuff, you know, Payne stood at mid off, so try and use him as much as possible. If you've got anything about angles or anything, look at me as the keeper and the field and this sort of stuff. So rather than just having random people shouting and screaming and giving their opinion all the time.
So you're using other guys, their skill sets, and being like, right, what part of this can I kind of offload to them and use their experience to deal with that? Yeah, exactly.
Especially in white, where you're restricted on time and you're restricted on you know, other bits that you need to actually get things done quite quickly.
What if you get like a conflict with someone where you kind of think, right, this road's the road we want to go down, and I think this is the best one, but then someone else has got another plan? So how do you deal with conflict between a player and yourself as captain when they've got one idea and you've got another?
I'd actually always tend to veer on the side of the bowler, because one big thing for me is I want the bowler to be doing what they want to do. I don't want the bowler to feel like they're running in and trying to execute something that they're not happy with, because I think that will reduce the chances of them getting it right. You know, it might be more of a, we're trying to have more discussions prior to games and almost sort of setting situations out. If we're in this scenario, what are you going to do? And so that there's a little bit more clarity around it and you're sort of prepared for most outcomes. But yeah, I'd like to give the bowler and the other player a little bit more onus, because if they're doing something that they believe in, they're more likely to go and execute.
Yeah. Even if it's something that you
even if it's something funky and I don't agree with, I think, you know, I'm usually pretty understanding. I can usually see why someone's suggesting something. So yeah.
Yeah, that's fair enough. What about body language as a leader? So I think I often see, especially if things don't go a certain way, I think a lot of people may not give it enough credit for how much it can genuinely impact someone's thought process when they are seeing the captain and their body language. So how do you see body language as a captain, as a leader, and its importance?
Yeah, I think this is something I need to probably improve as I captain more and more. I think because I get so into the game, so competitive and in the battle, I'm always quite animated with appeals and reactions to, you know, bad balls and this sort of stuff. So I think it's probably something I need to work on, because you want to give an impression that you're sort of taking everything in, but also if something doesn't quite go to plan, that you're a calming influence and that you're a positive influence on the bowler or fielder who may have done something wrong or may have mis-executed something, because everyone's trying to get everything right. And, you know, you'll make mistakes as well, but it's more about conveying that to them even when they don't feel it themselves. So I think being calm, but also being on the ball, trying to get that balance, which is something that I'm still working on, because I'm quite, as I said, animated in the field.
Yeah, I think as well, being a keeper in longer format, 4 day, for example, fatigue is going to set in. I think if your own fatigue is something that potentially it can really get in the way of just you acting the way you want to act. I just did a podcast yesterday and was talking around how pain gets in the way of you acting in accordance to like the ideal version of you, or just the way you want to be. So if you want to be jovial, if you want to be strong, brave, or if you want to be motivated, whatever it might be, insert any value there.
Yeah.
When pain, fatigue, frustration, stress is really kicking in, there's the emotional part of your brain that is just fired up and is just either wanting you to disengage or actually wanting you to just fire up and not act in the way you want. So I think that's a big part of sport, and especially for leaders. It's just an added skill that I think needs to be learned, which is, what are my values for this game? And I will not compromise on these, and therefore they have to be at the forefront of my mind when I'm competing, even when it gets stressed. And that's kind of like the entry cost for me being a leader. That's the cost and the sacrifice I've got to make.
For sure. Yeah, I think when all those and you make sort of less clear decisions when you are under pressure and when you are fatigued, I think that's sort of widely known. And that applies not just to your skill, but also to the decisions you make about the team and the situation.
What about making, sort of reviewing games that potentially haven't gone your way? How are you reviewing as a team when things didn't, you had a plan, maybe parts of it were mis-executed, maybe parts of the plan weren't great? How do you review as a captain to get the team into the best place possible for the next game?
Yeah, I think it's about like adaptation. I think, you know, what you did on a certain day, it might not have worked that day, but you might come up in the same situation the next week and that might work. It's about trying to understand in the moment what is the best thing to do. So I think a lot of our analysis, especially in the One Day Cup, has been based on, right, what's happened today? If we find ourselves in that situation again, how would we do it differently? And sort of actually actively then trying to find a solution for it, rather than just going, oh yeah, we just need to execute our death bowling better, or we need to, you know, be tighter in defense with the bat up top or something like that, rather than being sort of making it all skill focused. Actually, yeah, but how are we going to think in that moment, and how are we going to sort of give ourselves the best chance to execute? Because everyone's got the skills to do it. It's just when we're in that situation again, you're almost putting together like a range of plans that if I'm in this situation against this sort of batter at this time in the game, what am I going to? And trying to have two options or three options for how you could go about that, so that if one does go wrong, you've got somewhere else to go.
Yeah, I like that. I like the idea of preempting how you're going to react as a team to a certain scenario. I think it's really easy to go, oh, well, focus on the individual skill. We're going to do this skill, that skill. Bowlers nail this, batters nail this, whatever. But actually, very few times, I think I've even been involved in a side that has said, okay, when shit hits the fan and it's tough and we're up against it, we're not going to shout and scream at each other. We're not going to berate each other if someone has a bad throw or a misexecutes their skill or gets out with a bad shot the wrong time. Yep. This is how we're going to act. This is how we're going to do it. And yeah, I think that there's probably more teams that could do that, is preempting not just the skill sets that you want to achieve at a certain time, but actually how you want to go about it.
Yeah, and I think especially in the professional game, there's so much information available. You can actually plan for opposition players as well. So you obviously don't assume anything, because when you're in the moment on that day, on that field, on that wicket, things may change, but you can also put together a pretty good educated guess of how things may go in a certain situation. So yeah, I think that's key. And having a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, as opposed to just going, oh, you know, in this situation, I'll do that. I mean, that's really important as well, because, you know, on a certain day, I don't know, a bowler, for example, your pace might be slightly down, or the wicket might not suit you, or you might have a short boundary one side, and anything can play into those hands. So being really meticulous about how we plan, I think, is something that I'm trying to implement as a leader, rather than just almost trying to get by on just your skills.
Had you done any leadership? Had you done any captaincy stuff when you were younger? When you started in the game?
I captained a little bit growing up in like youth age groups. I did a little bit in the seconds before I came into the first as well. So I've always done a little bit, but I think the difference is, you know, that level of detail and almost coming into it with a vision of how you want to, what sort of leader you want to be. Like usually it's always been, oh, you're the captain, you choose who bowls and you choose where people bat and you choose what to do at the toss and that, like little things like that. But actually when you come into a professional setup, it's okay, but what impact am I going to have on our team, and how do I want our team to play, and how do I want us to do certain things, which is quite exciting that you know, and when you feel like people have respect for what you're saying, it's nice to feel like you can really invest in it.
Mm. So with your junior time in cricket, mm-hmm. getting into it, you came into the sort of system, sort of, I say, professional system later on. So how did you, before you did that, what was your journey into cricket like? Where did it start? And then sort of we'll go into how you got into the systems.
Yeah, so it started at my local club, Winterbourne, which is outside the back of my parents' house, probably when I was about 5, you know, just always loved playing. Went into hardball cricket as quickly as I could. I was probably 8 when I first played. And yeah, just sort of quite normal in I played my club cricket, and I always played football, and I always played rugby, and just sort of, depending on what season it was, just tried to do everything. Played for Gloucestershire's age groups from 11 to 17. You know, always played, always opened the bat in. Didn't do much keeping, but, you know, always fancied myself a little bit to do some wicket keeping. And yeah, just I was always really determined to just, I love batting, so I just wanted to score as many runs as possible all the time. I wanted to play all the games I could. I'd try and play, you know, men's on a Saturday, men's on a Sunday, club cricket in the week, play for Gloucestershire. Always went to sort of Pathway Academy trials, never really got a look in. And then got to 17 and, you know, still loved it, still felt like I could do it. And it just happened by luck, really. I didn't even, you know, get through an academy trial or anything like that. It just happened that both Gloss keepers were injured. The academy keeper was injured as well. So they had a lone keeper playing in the first, and then I ended up just getting a go in the seconds.
Wow.
Because I was just, you know, a young keeper who played in the league, who was in the system already, kind of. So they were just like, well, he could fill in, sort of thing. And yeah, that's how it happened. Like, there was obviously a few injuries around, so I played a few games and I didn't bat. I was batting at 12, but I was keeping, because you can play 12 in a lot of second team cricket, and just slowly worked my way up. You know, there's one week where then I ended up batting 11. Sort of got like a couple of 20 not outs or something. So once the other keepers started to come back, I started to stay in the team to bat, and I'd just bat at like 9 and just sort of bided my time, really.
So you're like 17 there?
17, even sort of into 18s. You know, I was going out on in club cricket, I was going out on a Saturday in Premier cricket, scoring hundreds, but then going into Gloss's twos and batting at 9 and 10, just almost filling in, but sort of got enough 20s and 30s and then got a couple of 50s, and I just sort of started to work my way up.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think so many young, well, let's just say cricketers in general, but I'm sure this will be relevant for many different people in different aspects of their sport, is I think there's a couple of parts to it. One will be, if I'm not in a pathway, not in an academy by 16, yep, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next part is, when I'm in that setup and I'm not doing the role that I hope to be doing, mm-hmm, in the future. So for you, it was so far away from what you really ended up doing, which is opening the batting, and then you're batting 11. You're at the literally top of the list, bottom of the list.
Yep.
I think too many people will give up or not be motivated in the potential opportunity if they had a bit more of a drawn out perspective on that. Mm-hmm. So being able to go, okay, well, I might not be opening the batting right now, but I could be in the future if I just chip away at these performances.
Yep.
How long do you think it took you from sort of being in that bottom spot to then getting the opportunity, which is where you ended up being later on?
Yeah, I think because I was still at school, it was all sort of still a bit novel. I still got days off school, and I was, you know, going and playing at professional grounds and against guys who were obviously signed. So I found it was still exciting. And it just happened, you know, on a couple of occasions that there was less pros available or the first team had a game. So there was a few more spots going, and you get a chance to go up and bat four, or you get chucked into open 1 week. And it just happened that I took that opportunity. You know, it wasn't anything, it wasn't rocket science. It wasn't like something drastically changed. Got the opportunity and took it, which, you know, I think now is slightly different, where I think a lot more pros are managed and less a sort of, a lot of people are given the choice about whether they play second team cricket or not. So a lot of young guys come in and straight away they're put up the top of the order, or they're given the new ball, or so. But then it was like, you know, when I got my first second team 100, it was one of these weeks I got chucked up to four, got to go, got 100. But the next week these pros guys were back, so I was back down at 8. I think that's just how it was.
Yeah.
Until then, you do it sort of on 2 or 3 occasions, and then people are like, oh, well, you know, if someone goes down in the first team, this guy looks like he could do it. So you then get, you earn the right to do it. It was almost a matter of respect and seniority, which you don't get as much now.
Yeah.
But it was quite cool that I could see myself almost working up. We had actually a running joke. There was 3 of us at the time, 3 young batters who we tended to get played, and we batted it for a period at 7, 8, 9, and it literally to the point where the twos coach went, well, you're at 7, you're at 8, you're at 9, whoever scores the most runs in this innings bats at 7 next innings. And I reckon for about half a season that's how it worked. So you were just like, well, I'm not going to get out, I'm going to try, and I want to bat at 7, I don't want to bat at 9, which is slightly different now, but I really enjoyed that because I'm so competitive that I was like, I don't want to lose.
I like that. I like the fact that I think that something like that is really worthwhile having. And to be fair, I just, as you're talking through that, just puts me back to when I was in the second team, fighting my way in to try and be an opening bowler. So I'm, for people that don't know cricket, I'm an opening bowler, is literally bowling the first ball of the game, the first couple of overs. And I think when I first managed to like weasel my way into the second team cricket, I remember the first game at Hove, and I think they threw me the ball at about the 64th over.
Yeah.
And it's like red hot day. The ball's just swollen. It's nowhere near new. It's not going to swing. And you're just like, okay. But I think at that moment, I was like, right, I want to be a new ball bowler, so I'm going to have to do this. Like, I can't expect them to just give me what I want straight away. I haven't literally earned the right to have that. And I do think that's missing from the game a little bit right now, earning the right to get the role that you want.
Yep.
And in that, it kind of leads on to, from what you were talking about being adaptable, is that if you do that and you've gone through those hard yards and you've gone through that pathway of, I'm not doing the role I want to do where I hope my finish line is. or close to where my finish line is. I'm not doing that role right now, but if I hang in here long enough, all of this experience, all of these like dog days that I'm going to go through, it's just going to build better character for me at the end. I'm going to be far more character driven by the end of it, rather than I've actually seen players go into professional setups through being brought over from other countries where if you looked at their records, they had everything essentially set out for them. They were given the positions they've always had. They just seamlessly had a lovely time in their sport. They've just been given, not given, but they've just had the opportunities that have worked perfectly for them.
Yeah.
And then when they hit another level or a period in their career where it was challenged, they weren't getting the results they were hoping for, they almost didn't have anything to fall back on. They almost didn't have sort of a character library of traits that they could fall back on and go, okay, I'm looking in my box here and I don't have a bit of resilience here. I don't know how to overcome this adversity. I don't know how to do that. And you kind of see them get a little bit lost and it doesn't work for them. It doesn't work out. And I think that journey that you can have early on of doing things not which you want to do, but actually in the long run will really hold you in good stead, is so valuable. And I just see too many players right now kind of just drowning in their own sorrows. Have been, I didn't do well today because I wasn't in the position that I would normally play, or it's not where I want to be. It's like, well, actually, can you put in a good performance? That doesn't stop you from putting in a good performance at all. You can actually still perform.
But it's like, there are different skills involved in opening the bowling, bowling later on, bowling with a new ball, bowling with an old ball, facing the new ball, starting against spin, like all these things in terms of batting in different positions. But however, it is all about building an innings and scoring runs. It's a skill of being able to score some runs. And I think if you can, as you said, be adaptable and learn to do all those things, then, you know, if you're working really hard in the second team to try and get an opportunity else up the next level, you know, if people know that, well, you know, he's shown that he can score runs at seven, he's shown that he can score runs at four, he's shown you can face the new ball as well. Like, it's still just strings to your bow that then if the opportunity does arise, you're in the conversation if a middle order player pulls out, or if an opener pulls out, or if you've shown that you can bowl with an old ball and you can reverse it and you can hold a line and length to get through a period where make it hard for a batter, or you can swing it with the new ball and do all those things as well. You know, you're going to have a lot more strings to your bow that you can fall back on if those opportunities arise. It's the exact same with me with keeping. That's why I worked so hard on my keeping, because, you know, I can play as a keeper or I can play as a batter. It gives me all those options, which, you know, worked out. That's the reason I played for England in the end, because I spent the 3 years before making myself into a keeper, or making myself into a good keeper rather than just someone who can put the gloves on. And, you know, it works all the way through. Just building yourself a massive skill set can be really beneficial.
We'll get on to the England stuff in a minute. One thing I wanted to ask you was, if you were, say, in a second team now, but you can be captain of Gloucester, you can be whatever you want here, or you're just a senior pro, and you've got a young person in the team, and they've got potential, they've got some skills, they're not the finished product by any means, they're striving to get in the team. You know their goals and aspirations, but they're not putting in performances. They're not getting the results that they would hope for. What would you like to see from that young player? What would be the things that you would like to see that would still keep you excited and interested about them?
I think showing a real like interest, a real curiosity in actually getting better, actually improving skills, rather than, I think a lot of young players, when they talk about themselves, or they talk about, you know, the people around them, it's like, oh, you know, this so-and-so, he, you know, plays for England 19s, or he, you know, did this or did this. It never seems to be bangs out hundreds, or he just takes loads of wickets, or it's always sort of something more external. It's not about how they go about it and how they actually work towards doing that. It's all about just the end achievement with a lot of young players, rather than actually, right, I'm here, I'm in this environment which can really help me. If I see someone who's, you know, being actually really smart about how they're preparing and how they're going out there and coming off and still trying to learn from that, asking guys who have played before really good questions about how they do it or how they have done it, or, you know, who have you seen who does this well, or and stuff like that. I think being curious, someone who's confident enough to do that instantly stands out. Even if they don't get the results straight away, even if they've come from club cricket and they've not been on the academy, which is another thing. It's like, oh yeah, you know, this guy played for Notts Academy. Oh yeah, he must be good. Well, you know, if they rock up and, as you said, they've got no skills in terms of problem solving or getting through a bad patch or adapting to a different role, I think being curious is huge about that. Like, if I got told 16 and I'm an opening batter and you're going to go in and bat 8, and, you know, you're probably going to start against spin, you're probably going to be batting with the tail, like little things like that, I'd instantly be like, right, who's done that? Who'd be good at that? I'd probably chat to one of the bowlers and say, like, how would a batter usually approach that? I think it's just being really keen to ask questions, like, be that bloke who everyone's going to say, oh, he's a badger, isn't he? Like, he loves the game. Like, there's absolutely no harm in that. Like, for prime example at the moment, Ollie Price with us, he's 23 now. But, like, when he was 15, he was the exact same. Like, you could just tell he loved cricket. He was so keen to learn all the time. He's still the same. And you just know people like that are putting themselves in a really good position.
Yeah, I think too many people get worried about asking questions, and the judgment of not knowing the answer says something about them. Says, like, I don't know what I'm talking about. Therefore, you're now going to judge me because I don't know the answer, and you're not going to think I'm good enough. And there's probably that storyline that plays over and over again. The one I always also look out for is, do people judge others or talk ill of other players to make themselves look better, to like inadvertently project a better image of themselves and be like, and I get this, especially if I'm talking about, say, another young player in another team who does a similar position. So you can kind of know they're a bit of a threat.
Yeah.
And then you'll talk to someone about them and it might be a father, it might be a friend, and they'll just be, oh, well, they do this and they don't do that and they're no good at that.
Yeah.
And they're doing that to bring that person down, to then elevate the person they're sort of standing up for.
Yeah.
Or it might even be themselves. They could sometimes do that to just elevate themselves. And I think that goes to your point there of, yeah, but why aren't you looking or taking on board, like, the curiosity of how that person is doing well, how that person is getting there, and be driven to go, right, well, if they're doing that, then I can do that. There's nothing stopping you from the way people go about doing things. And I think it's a bit of a lazy option to drag people down. I was a big one for it. Like, if I saw someone that I knew had a better skill set than me, even if it was slightly different, I just went and just studied them, watched them, saw how they did things. And even if, say, they went and trained and went into the nets or did whatever, I was like, I'm going to go do that as well. Mm. I'm just going to follow them now and just follow them and maybe increase a little bit more here and there. And then it's just a case of, I've done everything I can. I've not been lazy in saying, oh, well, they're no good, and making myself be better, when actually I don't have any, you don't have any evidence as well that you can do the thing that you might be talking well of from the other person.
Exactly. I think that's how the best teams are formed. Obviously, one is healthy competition. And two, I think when you drive each other rather than try and pull each other down, you know, at times, someone might get picked ahead of someone else, and it might be, you know, disappointing for a certain player if they miss out. But ultimately, you're becoming a better player. Like, we always laugh about it because, you know, the likes of Ollie Price, Ben Charlesworth, myself, we're always like in and hitting. But the great thing about it is, a lot of the time, we don't even need a coach there, or you get a lot of the young lads all going together. And yeah, they're young players who haven't played a huge amount of cricket, but, you know, for example, Ben's extremely good against the new ball. Ollie's extremely good at playing spin. And they're always bouncing ideas off each other. They're always almost a little bit competitive in that, you know, I want to be better than him at that. But it's also, it's in a very healthy way where they're constantly driving each other, which is why it's really exciting when they then, it comes to fruition. And for example, Ollie at the moment's just churning out all sorts of scores, but it's of no surprise to anyone because he's extremely driven. He uses the people around him. He asks questions. He, you know, he'll ask young players questions. He'll ask people who are more experienced than him questions. He won't judge people on who they are, how many games they've played, how old they are, where they're from. He's constantly just like, well, yeah, he does that well. Why, what does he do to do that well? I definitely agree. If you can drive everyone upwards, why would you pull someone down instead?
Yeah, and I think the more you invest into helping other people, that actually still plays to the part of your ego mind, which is around, I want to be recognized and valued for doing something. It's like, well, if you want to be recognized and valued for something that even you don't do, help someone else.
Yeah.
Just help someone else and you will find that eventually you'll get recognized for it because you'll be able to revel in their successes as well. I think you're really good at that. I think you're really good at anyone in your team, let's say in the top 5, 6 in your team. Obviously, you're captain, but you're really good at putting on social media straight away, but a great note of like, this person's worked hard for this. It's great to see them doing well. And I think the more you can boost those people up, you will get the recognition of being on their side when they have successes. And yeah, if it's recognition you're craving, you'll probably get it anyway, just by helping people.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's something we drive quite a lot at Gloss in terms of when in, like, you know, in the county season, the first team, the second team, you go like weeks without seeing each other because everyone's in a different place at a different time. Actually trying to create some unity around, you know, celebrating everyone's successes. It's not just about who's doing it in the first team. I think because those players are going to play a part at some point, it's something that we do really well. And, you know, constantly trying to help those blokes as well, because I feel like now I'm in a position where I've played enough second team cricket and enough first team cricket that, you know, no one wants to be in the second team, whether you're 16, 18, 20, 30, everyone's striving to be in that first team. So if you can create an environment where everyone's trying to boost everyone to that level, your team's instantly going to get better rather than, you know, like, oh no, he's threatening my position. I think people who do that aren't going to improve themselves either. They're just going to constantly, like, if their levels are falling, they're going to try and drag everyone else down just so that they stay sort of relatively in the same position.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
I don't think, you know, any of the best players would ever be like that.
No. I think just before we get on to your England time with England and that experience, I'd love to see what your take is on character. What do you believe are good characteristics to have for people that may be unaware of what it takes to transition from system, amateur, into a professional setup? Because there is a clear difference. It really is. But what are your sort of characteristics, values, traits that you think people need to have in order to transition into being a professional?
Yeah, obviously, I think it goes without saying hard work, but I think it's more about actually having more of an idea of what works for you. I know very good players who spend loads of time looking at technical work. I know some very, very good players who do hardly any stereotypical technical work, and it's all about how am I going to approach playing a certain team or playing a certain bowler. If I find myself in that situation, what am I going to do to combat it? And it's more of a tactical focus. I think just understanding what works best for you is so key when transitioning to professional cricket, because it's so intense and you're constantly playing and constantly traveling. Actually, you'd think there's loads and loads of time where you're training and working on stuff. Actually, there's not many windows, especially in the season, where you can really like work on improving stuff. So you've got to work really smart. It's not just a case of you going 6 hours a day and hit balls. So I think understanding what works best for you is key. And obviously that curiosity that we've just spoken about is massive in trying to learn from all the people around you, because you've got so many tools there in terms of experience, in terms of coaching, in terms of your teammates, that, you know, there's always more than enough outlets there to sort of drive you to be better.
Mm. Okay, with you. So you were having a cracking season, and eventually England come knocking. Talk us through that experience.
Yeah, it was surreal. I think because of how COVID worked, and I actually got, you know, selected, but because there was big squads, it was almost a selection without a selection. So I almost benefited from being there and having that exposure to all those incredible players and coaches before I even got selected. So I was almost there training and learning from all these men and women who were so experienced and good at what they did, even when I felt like I was, you know, behind where they were. But all those learnings, when like a year later I was called up, I almost felt like I'd been there for a year or 18 months. So actually the environment and the how they did things and that sort of thing never sort of overwhelmed me, which, even though the whole performance side of things didn't go to plan, I didn't feel like it was because I was overwhelmed or because I wasn't ready or because anything like that, which, you know, that was really good, and that worked in my favor. It was still weird being, you know, on a field or in the nets with, you know, England's best players. That was pretty cool, and, you know, I'll never forget that. That was, yeah, very surreal.
So as you mentioned, the performances that you had in the games you played didn't go to plan.
Yeah,
weren't where you would potentially have hoped them to be. And so what happened after that? Where did you go after that, and what sort of place did that put you in?
Yeah, not the best. I mean, I've always been someone who, more than I should, has sort of lived on the result a little bit. Still, like, to this day, more than I should, but something that I'm trying to really clamp down on is not letting the outcome dictate everything else that then happens. I think then I did. As soon as I got, you know, the first duck, it was, oh, I've got one more game to prove myself, essentially. Then I got a duck in the first innings of the second game, and I was like, well, there's not really much coming back from this. Like, I've got no runs. You know, the injuries that have happened, they'll just come straight back in. And it was almost like I wrote myself off a little bit before the experience had even ended. So I didn't really help myself. And afterwards, you know, I actually finished the season pretty well after that, but I still felt a little bit like it just sort of deflated me. And it just felt like that was it, done. Like you're back to square one in terms of you have to go back and do all the things I'd done before. I'd have to do them all again in order to get another look in. But actually, looking back on it now, you build up that credit, you build up that sort of respect, and people know that you're a good player. You know, if you have a lot of people will go back-to-back games without scoring any runs or taking any wickets. Doesn't mean they're a bad player, but I think with the pressure I put on myself and the expectation around playing for England and being on debut, the eyes that are on you, all those things contribute to then when it doesn't go to plan, you feel like it's just back to square one.
Mm. I think you even see players that have been in similar positions to you where they have even gone into teams because of injuries with other players in their similar positions, done well, and then still not played a game again after that because the player that's come back is absolutely world-class, has got a position cemented in that team, and they've just not had it. It's just the fact that you had an experience where the performances just weren't where they
weren't there, yeah.
Would have hoped to have been. So what if you were looking back now, obviously with a lot more time to reflect, and you look at the James going into those tests and coming out of them, essentially, we obviously started working together pretty, not soon after, but fairly soon after that all happened. What do you say some of the biggest differences you've felt now, or biggest lessons you've learned from, yeah, that James before playing for England and then James now?
Yeah, I feel like then it was, as I just said, all about the outcome. I was my emotions and my feelings towards myself and my game were based on what happened on that field, which, as we know, 95% of the time in cricket, that's not going to be positive. I think now I'm far better at managing that. I still get disappointed when I get out. I still, you know, I have times where I'm probably far too harsh on myself. I don't let that dictate my whole mood towards life in general, rather than just my sport. I think that's really key, because, you know, we talked a lot about fatigue earlier. That just drains you, and that's just not going to help your mood, your emotions. It's not going to help you in preparation for the next game. It's not going to do any good. So trying to maintain that, I think, is the biggest difference. And specifically in terms of just general, like, self-esteem, self-worth, I think it's trying to separate those two things is something that I've improved a lot since then. Because after that, it was like, I've had a couple of shit games. The whole playing international cricket's not gone to plan. But I just, like, hated myself for it for a while, which, you know, isn't justified, because if I'd have had two bad games for Gloucestershire or two bad games of club cricket, I wouldn't have just hated myself. But again, it was that value I put on that experience, which probably did that a little bit, which is something that now I think if I did it again, and I've played, you know, England Lions cricket since, was something that I tried to almost remove from that. And, you know, it worked, and I played a lot better because of it. And I'm absolutely adamant that that played a huge part in that.
That's such a big part that's going to resonate with a lot of people, I think. Just the idea of interlinking performance with self-worth.
Yeah.
And you say, rather than that experience was bad, just say, well, I am bad.
Yeah.
Having that experience.
Yeah.
And that's such a different perspective to have. I know it's one we've spoken about quite a lot, and I think, yeah, you're so right. If you'd had those bad runner games for Gloucester, you wouldn't think too much, but it's because of the level, the expectation that you should be doing well, or the idea that I'm now at this level, therefore I want to do well a little bit more than probably others. And so, yeah, it's a good lesson for a lot of people, just to strip away that idea that your performance means that you are worthy. Again, it's also the other flip side, right? It doesn't, I think too many people can get caught up on when they're constantly having success.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that can speak to, well, I'm now someone who gets success. I'm someone that gets, and I always see that as a bit of a danger, because you're never really ready around the corner for an undoubted failure that is going to come. We know sport is a game of failure. So we know that there's going to be a failure at some stage, and if you haven't preempted it or have consistent routines and habits in place to just allow good performances to be a bit of a surprise, then yeah, that you'll struggle in those times. You won't be able to accept them. It's the inability to accept where we will suffer in that.
Yeah, this is why focusing on processes is so big, because no one has the right to score runs. No one has the right to go out and perform every game. No one will perform every game ever. Like, that's a fact. And if you can just understand that by working out what process is good for you, you're going to have a higher percentage of good days. I think that's, like, so key. Because then when it does go badly, you can look back and go, well, this did work for me. I know that this works for me. Sometimes I'm going to follow the same process, and for some other reason, it doesn't work out. But if you can have that and work out what's your best way of going about it, then it's going to be more consistent.
Yeah, yeah. Trusting that process, even when it doesn't work out, very challenging.
Yeah.
But you just got to have those a few experiences where it has worked out. And I think the honesty as well in per game, where you can very easily say, oh, well, this happened because of some other reason, something in the environment changed, whatever. And that could be enough to take you off the process. And that step of doing that allows you to not review that game in the right way, because you're not looking at it and going, well, I wasn't doing my process, that's why I got out or had a bad performance, whatever it might be. And actually, I'm throwing it on an excuse of something outside of me changed, and it's that reason, that's the fault. And I think once you get into that mindset, it gets a bit dangerous, because you're focusing on so many different things that are out of your control rather than just keep controlling what I can. That's what I want to do.
Absolutely.
With England having changed their approach to playing the game, Bazball, for people that don't know cricket that are listening to the show, basically a style of cricket that's been brought into the game of highly aggressive, non-fear of failure, just really 100 mile an hour type mm-hmm. style of cricket, bringing a one-day format almost into the longer format. Has that had an impact on the county scene? Have you found that Bazball has had an impact on county players and how they're going about it? Is it a conversation that's going on? What's the feel out there?
I haven't felt like it's impacted it too much. I feel like a few people tried early season and realized how hard it is to do, because it's not just about how you go out and play. It's about the wickets that you're given, the way you're playing. And just, you know, in county cricket, it's almost a completely different sport. You know, you get rubbish wickets at times, you get, like, there's that impact of, you know, obviously in test cricket, you play a series and you're looking to win that series and you're looking to entertain, and a lot more people are paying money to come and watch. Whereas in county cricket, you've got to win to basically earn more money, to then be able to bring in more players and sustain the club, essentially. So I think there's an element of there's almost a little bit more on it in terms of getting wins, like, rather than, you know, the England side, it's great that they're going out and going, we're going to entertain people and this is going to be how we're going to do it. And it's worked and they're doing it brilliantly. But then there's almost that extra layer of, you know, we have to win in our dressing room. We're like, how are we going to best win? You know, we're not. I certainly can go out and play like Ben Stokes and thump every ball for six, because I'd end up not scoring any runs. And I think that's, you know, some people have, because they've made it so clear that they want certain type of player to go in and play in that team, you'll probably find certain people changing the way they play, but whether it's the best thing for them, I don't know. Like,
yeah,
straight away, I'm not going to go out and try and thump it, because the way I get my runs is by performing my processes, which is something that I've worked really hard on. And if I go out and score 1500 runs in a year, then, you know, that's, if that doesn't get me there, then, yes.
Yeah. That's so interesting. People trying to mold themselves to try and achieve a goal.
Yeah.
But actually, in the process of doing that, risk really not achieving that goal, because they're not doing something that's natural to them. That's such an interesting way to look at it.
And if you look too far ahead, then obviously, as you said, you can almost go backwards in trying to achieve it, which is going to make things even harder. Yeah. I think it's a really interesting one, because, you know, people who are highly ambitious, I'd love to play for England again. And you'd sort of sit there and think, well, if I'm not willing to change how I play to try and fit that brand, how am I going to do it, sort of thing? It's quite a tricky one.
I'd love to pose this question to Brendan McCullum, right? I'd love to be able to just ask him, if you've got a player that isn't playing the style of cricket that you want, but is producing the numbers to get in, how do you deal with that? What are you saying to that? And it'd be interesting to see where they go. I think the Ashes was an interesting one, because it got their style got more scrutiny when it didn't work, mm-hmm. and then you saw them refine it. So I think over time it's going to refine. I think it will refine. And I think there's parts of it where you have to be really sensible. Like, these players have got incredible ability to do certain things that a lot of players can't do. But then I think there was a bit of a getting carried away with it. And then actually now, especially the back end of that the series, they pulled it in. They reined it in the right moment and sort of used that county cricket nous a little bit, which was assess the pitch, the conditions. It's not necessarily going to be a flat deck that most test wickets can be, where they can be really, really flat, really, really good for batting. And it was more, okay, assess the conditions, assess the team, and then go through those gears when we need to and bring out the style of play that we want to play at the right time.
Yeah.
Which could be something that you then find happens in county cricket, right? You just get a day where
you score.
Let's take you, for example, and you get to 75 to 100, and or you scramble to that first 30, 50. The first part's really hard, but then pitch flattens out, get in zone, and then you bring in one day mode, right? You do it. You might find that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just think as the process of baseball refines and gets exposed to different conditions, I think we'll see more of like where players can fit into it and how it might work.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed.
Look, mate, this has been great. This has been great having you on. Great chatting. It's been awesome working with you. I think people, from my perspective, I think you're one of those players that really is a professional through and through. You seek out all the different parts that you want to improve on. And I know working with someone like me is not something that a lot of people want to, not they don't want to work with me, but it's like the mental part of their game can be the most challenging part for them to actually go and take that step to work on. And you're pretty active in doing that because it's a stone that you want to make sure you haven't not looked under. So you're very good at that. I think it's something for people to recognize that if you do want to be at that level, it's all about those professional bits as well.
Yeah.
So I've loved working with you. But one question I ask people before we finish off as well is there anything like a documentary, a series, or a movie, book, quote that you have found interesting, inspiring that you have seen recently and you perhaps recommend to people?
I really like The Last Dance. That was one that I love, but I know that a lot of people have watched that. I just think, you know, not everyone's going to be Michael Jordan, obviously, but I think just actually the messages in that, because there's a lot of stuff about obviously being the best, but also how that can also play into a team dynamic. I think it was really interesting to see how that worked. The other one was I've watched recently is on the Tour de France on Netflix as well, which
Unchained.
I like my cycling, but I'm not a huge watcher of cycling. But I sort of know enough, but sort of it was something new for me to see actually the team dynamics involved in like individual sports. I know like you work with a lot of people who are in individual sports, but the team dynamics work in the exact same way. That was really, really interesting. And I liked how, you know, sometimes you've got to put your own ambitions aside to progress the team, but, you know, acts like that are always going to come back and benefit you in the end. That was really, really cool to watch as well.
Yeah, totally. I watched the Mark Cavendish documentary as well on Netflix. That's amazing as well. More individual based, obviously, but again, there's a lot around team and mental health is a big conversation in that one. But yeah, Last Dance comes up quite a bit. James, where's the best place for people to follow you? Where should we send them?
Yeah, I mean, if you like cricket, obviously, get around the county championship the next month or so. But you know, I'm pretty active on Instagram as well. I like to repost and post and that sort of stuff, especially on my story, just anything that interests me. So that's a good place to go.
All right, mate, we'll put the links in the show notes. Thanks again for coming on. It's been great having you, and some awesome stuff there that people can take away.
Thanks for having us. No, my pleasure.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate.